Hi everyone, it's Tyra, and welcome back to another episode of Rockin' and Talkin' Indie Aussies. This is episode 5, which makes me really excited because that means that there's only 2 more episodes left in season 1, and I'm really proud of how everything has gone this far, and really happy to see new listeners and new people sharing the podcast. So that makes me really happy and really proud of myself, and also really happy that the people that I have interviewed are getting more and more exposure to just more people in general. Anyway, this is episode 5, and this episode is with Tom Ray of Gangrene Dream, a punk band in Melbourne, and I'm really excited for you all to hear what he has to say, because not only is he in this band, but he also is a producer, so you get another producer perspective along with Anna's. So I think that these episodes going back to back together, it's a really good idea. I was thinking very strategically with this one. And this episode, just like Anna's, is going to be one that you can listen to or watch. And the watch version is only on Spotify. So if you're listening to this on another platform, head over to Spotify so you can also watch this if you're interested in it. But if not, you can just hang tight and hit play and you'll be able to listen to the entire episode. And thank you, and I hope you enjoy what's to come. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Of course. I am very excited to have this combo with you. Do you have any questions for me before we begin?
Not really. Oh, well, I didn't actually get where you were from. Is it a new thing, or is it a marketing thing, or?
Yeah, it is for uni. So I'm a very interesting case. So I'm originally from the US, but I've been doing my uni degree in London since September of last year.
Cool.
Yeah. And so my whole topic of like what's going on in Melbourne has been really influenced by some of my friends that I met while I was in the UK, because they're also musos here.
Right.
So really inspired. They kind of kickstarted a lot of this project, and it just made me more curious about like the music scene in Australia. And so I've gone I'm like all over the place, but like in a really good way, to finally kind of like sit in a space where I really like what I'm finding. And I don't know, I just find it really cool. And yeah, so long-winded story to be like, I went from the US to the UK and now I'm here.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you. I try.
So the internet is a bit crap here, but so just let me know if it goes bad. But
yeah, no worries.
I'm currently in outback Queensland, which is like 4,000 kilometers away from Melbourne. Yeah. So, and it's like a tiny little town with like 1,000 people. And yeah, it's pretty rural, so the internet's a bit crap.
Yeah, no worries. It is totally okay. My hometown back in the US is super small, and I have lots of friends who live out more in like rural areas. So I get it. So you don't even have to explain. Cool. Any other questions for me?
No, I don't think so.
All right, right on. So the way that I have structured the interview, there are 3 different sections of questions, and it goes background and then asking about success and then just being a musician in Melbourne. So the first part is going to be, so how would you describe what you do?
As musically or in general?
Musically.
Musically. So I play in a band, a punk rock band-ish called sort of psychedelic punk band within it. I don't know. I've had genres. It's hard to do. But and I play guitar in that. I also play guitar for a pop artist called Tamsin Otway. It's just a backup artist. I'm also a sound engineer and a technician. I'm touring at the moment as a theatre technician. So it's part of a theatre show. But yeah, but also mixing bands and stuff like that is a lot of my job. And I also have done a bit of sort of producing of, and booking of gigs and stuff. So I've done a bit of everything.
Yeah. I'm just curious, like, how do you balance all those different roles that you do in different areas?
I don't. with lots of stress. It's taken me, actually, I'm better at it these days, but I'm like, it's just being very organized and having color-coded calendars and making sure you're on top of everything.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it took me years to get to this point, and I was not an automatically organized type of person. it's really like made me be organized.
Yeah, I would imagine, especially when you have, like, when you're in different roles that have different demands for what you need to do, like, yeah, not just physically but also mentally, I would imagine that you would want to at least be as organized as possible, because I can imagine it can get overwhelming.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm much better at it these days, but yeah, definitely, yeah, a lot of sort of anxiety and stuff comes from that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Being organized, being disorganized and late, and then, like, it's kind of the other difficult thing, especially with doing the sort of backstage work that's long hours and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. you kind of miss out on a lot of stuff because everyone else, you know, has a weekend, and we don't have a weekend in the music industry or in the theatre industry. So
yeah.
I feel like you let people down a lot.
Mm.
Yeah.
How did you find yourself doing things within theatre?
It was really an accident. I was just like, I studied audio stuff, sound stuff, and I got a job at, it was just a local town hall. Around the corner from where I was living at the time, and that venue was much more theatre focused, so I met lots of theatre people through that.
Mm.
And then as you work, it all just becomes sort of word of mouth stuff. So, and now I'm on the other side of the country doing theatre shows. So,
what is the show?
The show's called Wellbone, so it's a kids show, but it's fully independent by this guy Jens, who's been performing for all over the world for like 40 years or something.
Wow.
Yeah, and so he used to be a big circus performer, but now he sort of has shifted a bit, and he makes like all these sort of gadgets out of old materials and stuff, and then there's a narrative about what all the gadgets are. And
oh, cool.
It's pretty right on show. It's pretty, like, it's a kid show, but I don't think it talks down to kids. I like it. I wouldn't have come into it with it if I didn't like it, but, you know.
Right on. Yeah. And then you can elaborate on this. So would you consider yourself a full-time or part-time musician?
I'd say part-time musician. I'd say, like, my job is the backstage stuff, and the onstage stuff is, yeah, that is, yeah, part-time when I can.
Yeah, okay, right on.
Yeah.
And then the follow-up question is, how long have you done music?
Nearly 20 years, I think.
Nice.
I was about 14 when I started, so I'm turning 33 next week, so it'd be 19 years.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, maybe it was 13. Maybe it is 20 years this year. I'll have to ask Mum. I think I got a bass guitar for my birthday when I was 13.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So you started with a bass.
Yes.
Oh, right on.
The last band I was in, I was a bass player. And then I got a bit of guitar. I'll swap around. Do it all.
Nice. I love that. I think it's really cool to start off and then branch out into, like, other instruments. Is there something else you would like to pick up on?
I mean, I'm always mucking around with other instruments. Mm. I'm a very frustrated drummer. I've never been able to get that very, very well. I do a little bit of keys and stuff, but just enough to make songs sound a bit more full, but not like, I'm not a virtuosic piano player or anything. I can't do anything fancy.
Okay. Just enough to get the job done.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, right on. But now we're going to move into the section that's all about, like, your personal ideation of success. So starting off, you kind of answered this with the full-time or part-time question, but would you say that you were living on or off music?
Living on as in making a living?
Yeah, income-wise.
I mean, if you include the teching stuff, yes.
Okay.
But not from playing music or recording or selling music or anything. Definitely not that. That's a loss.
Do you get paid for any like gigs that you do?
Yes. So it's generally like a ticket split sort of deal. So depending on the venue, but you know, it's usually around the venue will take sort of a 10 to 20% cut of the tickets, and then we get the rest, and then we have to pay the supports and the sound writing and all that stuff. So,
right,
you know, you don't make much.
Yeah.
And I'm actually in a dispute with the venue as well, because I when I say dispute, they're not even answering my emails anymore, but there is a venue, quite a famous venue in Melbourne. I'll name them. They're called Cherry Bar. They have not paid us. I mean, that show was in February.
Oh, no.
Or even March, maybe. But, yeah, quite a while ago. And they just won't reply to our emails and stuff like that. And it's not that much money. It's, like, $600 or something.
Mm.
And they're like, a bar that's open every single night. Like, they'd make that all the time.
Mm.
And, yeah, I've heard they've done it to a few people. So I don't know what the next step is, but I've been trying to do fancy-looking legal letters and be like,
hey, yeah, that's really unfortunate. I'm sorry to hear that.
It's all right.
I'm curious now that you said this is, because I have not been on the other side of like booking a show or anything like that, but it is something interested in doing at some point, like maybe a manager position. Is there an actual contract that gets signed between a musician or like a band with the venue, an agreement of payment?
Yes and no. So it depends. Like small gigs like ours, because we're pretty small time, it's usually just a written an email, but that's still enough to be legally binding, but it's not a contract as such. When you get to sort of the gigs that I work on at a mix for, which is sort of mid-level, sort of not stadiums, but like, you know, 500 to a few thousand people. At that level, you start to get, you know, bands will have a proper contract because they start having really specific needs.
Yeah.
And there starts to be all kinds of deals with who gets what split of the door. Different venues have different things.
Yeah.
Merch as well. Yeah. Once you start getting bigger, venues start taking a cut of merch, which is a contentious issue because what are they actually doing except for just providing a table? Yeah, so it's small time is generally just an email between the venue and they just tell you this is the deal, take it or leave it. Basically, you don't have a lot of choice when you're in a small band.
Right.
And then once you get a bit of a following, you can start drawing up your own contracts and asking for specific things. And then you can, and if you get even bigger, you can start having people fighting for you.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Okay, that's just like good to know in general.
Yeah.
Thank you. You educated me. Now I'm curious about this. So what are, like, in your opinion, what are three things that you consider makes a musician successful?
Personally?
Yeah, whatever you think.
I just think more than anything else, it's just about getting that fuzzy feeling in here. A bit lower down for me. But I can't get in the camera. That's the main thing. And I think if it doesn't really matter that much, if you're doing it, if you aim for that first, then nothing else matters as much. But then the next thing is, but if I talk about like personal goals that I would, if I be a bit less fluffy. For me, it's there's certain local radio stations that I'd like to get played on.
Yeah.
And just see that people are listening to the music and coming to the shows. doesn't have to be heaps of people, just like, you know, enough to make venues feel not empty. And it's like, I don't have big goals with music. I just want to feel good from it.
It's a different type of goal. It may not be that like typical, you know, like when you think of like music industry type of things of like, you need to have these, like, yes, getting people to show up is a big thing, but it's not like what the industry says, like you need to have X amount of this or else, like, it's more of like how you feel in that moment.
Yeah. And I think obviously that feeling is amplified when there's a lot more people at the show.
Yeah.
But you can still have just as much fun when you're playing to a room of like 10 people in it.
Yeah. Where do you typically find yourself playing? Venues.
Oh, venues. So our last gig was at the Bergy Bandroom, which is a new-ish, about a year old now, which is in Brunswick. I think it's like a 250 capacity. It's a really, 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 really nice venue. Good people. They've done it all really well. There's all the PA set up properly and there's nice lighting and they're good to the bands and they've paid properly and they're very transparent and they help you do marketing a bit as well.
Oh, nice.
Well, in that they actually, a lot of venues will just do nothing and they just put it all on the artist.
Yeah.
Where the Bergy will actually, you know, they do a bit of promotion through their own social media and stuff like that too. So that's good and it's rare because it's like if I speak to people sort of my parents' age who were musicians, the onus used to be a lot more on the venue to get people in. And now it's just not anymore. Like the venues don't have any responsibility. It's up to the artists to bring the band, bring the people in.
Why do you think that changed?
I'm not sure. I think the culture around going to, like, people, I think it maybe in the 80s and 90s, just going out to a band was just a done thing, like it's what everyone does.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's sort of, it's, you don't necessarily just expect to see a band when you go out. You'll go and see because there'll be like clubs or I'm not one of those anti dance music, anti clubbing people, but like it's just maybe that there's a broader spectrum of things to do. And it's not the norm to have a band on anymore. So the venue doesn't quite have to. Yeah, the band venues don't just have that natural pull anymore. I think. I don't know. That's an interesting question.
Yeah. Right. Because it's been a conversation that I've had with just multiple people, not just like other people that I've been interviewing, but just like other stakeholders around, where they're just noticing that younger, like the people who would generate like a newer type of, you know, growing music scene here would be the younger demographic, maybe like 18 to maybe like 24. And those are people that are struggling to get out. So it's really interesting to think about it in the viewpoint of like, well, if venues are not doing a lot of marketing and these people do follow them, then that really kind of creates a disconnect in one way. But also if they're not able to go to these venues, then they're not going to see the musicians who are also going to promote their things. So it becomes a really interesting and unfortunate cycle.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And I think that I've heard, like, I don't know, and this is all, based on stuff I've read in the media as well. So it's like, you can take it with a grain of salt, but it's like the people who were sort of turning 18 during COVID didn't have that thing of, hey, I'm 18, I'm going to go and go out. And they kind of just missed it. And then they didn't. And then when they finally could, they didn't actually go and do it.
Yeah.
Like, it just wasn't a thing for them. So it's just like they don't actually have that culture of sort of going out and going even clubbing or whatever. It's just that their culture doesn't seem to be there as much.
Hmm.
So, but I don't know. I don't know if that's true. This is from articles in the media. So.
No, that you, that same thing for me. Like, reading things that I've heard from different stakeholders that also work within music here, it's been really big conversation of like, how do you get these people to get out to revive part of the like live music scene that's happening here? But then I find it really interesting that the marketing for a show, I feel like, my opinion, this is also like my previous job that I had in the UK, I was a social media manager for a place that doubled as a recording studio and a music venue.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I noticed that like we would get things booked, but sometimes we wouldn't promote it. And I found that to be really interesting as a social media manager, to be like, oh, like we have a list, we should start really trying to roll this out, because I know it should be like, part of it's like, oh, why don't we have people coming out? And it's like, oh, we're not promoting it enough. But also, this is also the viewpoint of somebody who's really interested in artist development, of like, oh, I can't just be on things to get something out of it. So that's really, really interesting. And were you in your band prior to COVID?
No, so I was in a different band before COVID.
Okay.
And then that band sort of, not to do with COVID, just sort of dissolved just before COVID.
Yeah.
And then when we were doing our lockdowns, there was like little breaks every now and then. They'd let us out for a little bit and then we'd go back into lockdown. I met the people who I started this band with just through a Facebook group in one of those breaks, and then slowly we'd start getting stuff together, and then we'd have to go into lockdown again and sort of did all that stuff. So
cool. And the reason I was just asking that, because I wasn't sure if any differences between differences between prior to COVID versus like after, in terms of just like turnout.
It's definitely less. I think maybe, well, it was the same in theatre, and it was the same in sort of bigger shows too.
Yeah.
It was, people were very reluctant to pre-purchase tickets for things because they didn't have any trust that things were going to get cancelled.
Okay. That's fair.
That was the first thing. But I think even now that it's been sort of 2 years, I think now that it's entering another problem, is that it's really expensive to live in Melbourne now, and it's really expensive to go out.
Yeah.
So that also is a huge problem because people just can't afford it.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw my friend's band probably, I don't know, whenever I was back in Melbourne. I can't remember. I've been on tour for a few weeks now. But it was like a Thursday night and I was driving, but I still had a couple of beers when I was at the gig and got food while I was out. And I spent $100 in one night.
Mm.
And that's not like a big party night where I'm drinking all night and I'm going home in an Uber at 3 a.m. It was like a Thursday night where I got home at like midnight. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, I think even, yeah, maybe people were starting to get over all that COVID stuff, and now we've been hit with that we can't afford to live anymore. We can't afford our rent and food, and so we can't afford to go to gigs.
Yeah, like, which does create like a whole other problem. Like, if people can't go out to shows, what does it mean for the people who are playing the shows?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Then they can't afford anything either.
It's rough, and I hope it does eventually start to get better, just in general, just because it's a mess. No one wants to be in a recession. No one wants. No.
Well, they say that generally. I don't know that the arts do okay in a recession, but who knows?
Maybe like in terms of people have the ability to still create, but maybe not so much in terms of like income.
Yeah. Probably. I don't know.
That's a good question. I don't know either. But now my next question is, what is happening right now in your music career?
Well, it's kind of on pause at the moment because I've paused it to do this tour. But in terms of what has been happening, we put out a single just before I left and it kind of didn't do that well. Mm. But that's okay. When you sort of can't be around to do all the promo, we kind of rushed the release because I was going away.
I see.
So, yeah, there's lots of sort of non-ideal things about releasing that in terms of like doing the marketing properly and blah, 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 all that fun stuff. And I screwed up the distribution thing as well and it came out a day late.
Oh, no.
So it actually came out the day after we played the show that we were launching it at, but it was, yeah, it was a bit of a kerfuffle because we just rushed everything. But we'll be going, so I'm going to have a week break in this tour in a couple of weeks and we're going to go record two more songs in the studio and then I'm going to mix it on while I'm on the road and then hopefully we're going to release those next two songs when I get back in September.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's sort of our plans, whether or not that happens.
Yeah.
Because I'm sort of hoping a lot of things align in my schedule for that to work. But yeah.
In good timing, it'll work out.
Yeah.
And with that, I'm curious, do you have one current short-term and one long-term goal that you want to see, like, come to life?
I think we just like to get decent-ish numbers on the streams and stuff.
Okay.
Just enough to see that people are sort of going back and listening to the songs. And that doesn't have to be, that's like, for us, that's because we're playing sort of alternative punk music. So that's not hitting hundreds of thousands. That's like hitting a few thousand is good for us. So that'd be cool. And yeah, again, I think just to be recognized in some of the places that I think are cool within the scene, just like Fang It on PBS is our favorite radio show. Mm. They played us once, but just to like, you know, for him to be aware of who we are sort of properly and just be kind of cool.
Yeah.
We don't have to be big.
Yeah.
But just play cool shows with cool people. I think that's probably the main thing.
Okay. Yeah. So just like finding more opportunities to just get that visibility that you want.
Yeah.
Okay. Right on.
Yeah. And with the people who would sort of dig it, I guess.
Yeah.
It seems like lots of these social media things about get like a million plays because you can do this like target advertising and stuff like that. But I don't know if that's necessarily getting the right people to hear it. It's just getting you lots of plays. I don't know. Well, you did social media. You could answer that better than I could.
It really depends on like how well you know the audience that you want to reach because where I used to work, I knew that we needed to really target like the Gen Z audience because they were going to be the ones who really needed to come into the venue and make it lively in some capacity. And then realizing that the way that we were creating content, whether it was like a physical post or like a carousel post with multiple photos or like a reel, none of it was going, in my opinion, first, none of it was going to actually appeal to a Gen Z demographic. And so it was like lots of advocating for like, hey, if you really want to do these campaigns and get people to come out the shows, you really need to figure out the different way of talking to the audience. And majority of the people who follow the accounts were younger people. So it's like, well, the posts are looking a little bit more upper millennial, which is fine, which is totally fine. In terms of like setting the ads for the shows, it really came down to being like, do you actually understand the people who are looking at the content? And that's where you have to look at analytics and everything. And if, since it was my main job to do that, it's different. And then I could share that information with others. But I think about it too, with like a few of the conversations I've had with like some of my friends who are musos, and talking to them about like, oh, this is how you can understand like your demographics more and all that. I know that alone is really overwhelming when you're trying to write or trying to record, because it's a lot to do as a job. So trying to be like, hey, this is a way to help you get yourself pushed out. Yeah. So that's where I think it's really good to, like, if you have the time to do that, great. If not, I think it's good to try to try to find people who are willing to do it just because they want to help you.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the big thing. And sometimes ads work, sometimes ads don't work. Yeah. Which is the part that becomes really complicated.
Yeah.
No matter what, it becomes very complicated. And I think it just really depends on to like what platforms you're on. Like if you're more on Instagram and you have your following there, that's not bad, but it's going to stick to just the people who follow you and becomes harder to get newer people to see you, because that's how the Instagram algorithm really loves keeping you within your people. Yeah. Versus things like TikTok, which that's a whole other thing. like one of my friends, they recently released their first single from their upcoming album, and I follow them on TikTok, and I've been scrolling through my feed, and I was like, I saw four different videos that they pushed out with the exact same clip with different wording on the video, and I was like, good for them, they're really promoting this. I started to like repost some of them. I was like, I'm gonna help them get more visibility. Friend. But I also noticed that like they didn't get a lot of likes. So it's like, what are they doing? They're doing the exact same, they're doing the right thing that you need to do, like constantly posting on TikTok, but it still wasn't, I didn't see the views go up super high. So it's kind of like you just have to mess around with it, which is the whole thing.
Well, yeah, and then once you started spending money on doing all these experiments, and it's like when there's no money coming in anyway, it's like you're sort of losing. But yeah, I don't know, as I said, it's a fun thing for me anyway, so
yeah,
I mean, with the money to muck around with social media, it's not that big a deal, I guess.
Yeah, and like the way that I've been seeing things, because I also do a lot of music reviewing, I've noticed that at least within doing journalism, even if you can find places that will review for free, I think that really helps get that visibility out a little bit more, whether it's like locally or even internationally. I think that's one of the best things to start off, is doing that, and then slowly see like, oh, did like this journal, like did this blog or something help me? I think that's one of the best ways to start off, because it doesn't hurt you and any way, because it's free, and then you can kind of gauge to see if that like actually helps with
This has been good for me.
But now moving into the last section, it's all about being a musician here in this lovely city. So the first one is, what are three challenges that you've experienced being a musician in Melbourne?
Challenges. I mean, getting paid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess for me personally, it's just been about finding balance between doing the things within the industry that make the money and actually doing why I did it in the, why I'm doing all this in the first place, which was playing music.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's finding that balance.
Mm-hmm.
And gosh, what's the third thing? Third thing is just the organization of people and musicians and getting them together. For starters, it's hard enough to get, you know, four or five people together in a band who are all on the same page musically and they're all free on the same nights to practice. And then once you get that, you then have to put on a show. And then that's finding 15 to 20 people who are all available on this one night.
Yeah.
You can all do it and they actually will communicate. And musicians are terrible at communicating and they never send you the tech specs. And so it's organizational things. And I think, I actually think if that's one thing that will help you to be successful as an independent artist from a, where you'll get rebooked to gigs, is if you can be organized and on top of sending emails and sending through your tech specs and sending through your door lists and like just look professional, venues will book you again. But yeah, so that's the challenge, is organizing musicians, because they're not organized people.
Yeah. Do you think, like, with the organization part, do you think that's something that, like, could be changed for some people? Like, or, like, what I mean by that, like, is that just through experience for people to build that skill set?
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't have it
with
any aspect of my life, to be honest. but now I do, because I've also worked on both sides of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
I know how important it is, and I know how I feel when a band is on top of it,
mm-hmm.
and how much easier my day is. And then I'll say to the people who, to the venue, this is a good band, and they'll probably get booked again.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. And I'm just curious too, like, do you, like, from, because you have this, like, dual lens.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever had to hold, like, other bands accountable?
It kind of, you don't really get to. It kind of just goes, I mean, some bands just manage being disorganized and it just kind of works and it's fine.
Okay.
But, yeah, often it just sort of turns to chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be really, I mean, because it's not just sort of music I do. It's like it's everything from music to corporate dinners to theatre, obviously, and like sort of, yeah. It's, yeah, the ones when it's not organised, hasn't had that communication in the first place, it's when the running order of everything starts to fall out of place, and then like, bands start getting pissy at each other, and it's like, it hasn't been decided who will, you know, use the house drum kit or whatever. And yeah, it's when tensions can flare up a bit. And but yeah, I'm not really in a position of authority as a sound engineer, so it's not like I can pull people up.
Yeah,
but I can, like, especially if it's a younger band, I will try and say, like, kind of what I'd said before, and I was like, hey, just so you know, if you do these things, I and other sound people and venues will appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
okay,
that was kind of long-winded.
No, it was good. I got it. Now I'm gonna ask the opposite question, like, what are three ways that being a musician here has helped you in your career?
I guess because what I'd call my career is the backstage stuff. So I think it's really helpful to be a musician and know what it's like to be on stage when you're dealing with bands from the other side of stage, because you know what they're going through and you know the nerves they're feeling. And because, like, you know, the stereotypical sound engineer is, you know, that grumpy ponytail beard guy, a jaded old guy, is an asshole. So I think if you can actually approach it with a bit of empathy and sort of it helps you to do that and realize that musicians, like sometimes people might think that like an artist is being an asshole, but they're just nervous.
Yeah.
Like I find that happens a lot. And it's not just music. Like, I mean, if theater is the same, or theater more so even, because theater people have, they're quite funny about their before going on stage things and even like corporate things, like if someone's going up to do like their speech in front of the shareholders, or they're doing their like, or like they're like a scientist giving a brief on their study they've done or something like that, like that's a nerve-wracking thing to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it allows you to have empathy of what it's like to be on stage. That's one really long thing. I know you said three.
That's good.
I don't know. I don't know what else. Okay, well, the musician organizational thing, they feed back into each other. Like, it's really, like, getting organized.
Mm-hmm.
Having to organize playing in a band as well as having a career.
Mm.
It's just made me a better organized person in life.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, I can't think of a third one.
That's fine. No worries. You got two. That's good. the next question is, do you think Melbourne has a scene? And if so, can you describe it?
I think Melbourne has many scenes. Mm. There's definitely just like, I think Melbourne's in like a golden age of sort of punk music.
Mm.
It all started with like Camel and Sniffers and like all those sorts of bands, bands that I love. And maybe even before that, but they were obviously the breakout because they're like international now.
Yeah.
But there's great punk rock music coming out and lots of people love it at the moment. I know that my old band, which is a psychedelic rock band, we're part of the psych rock scene. There's a huge psych rock scene in Melbourne. Mm. I've forgotten the name of the record label, but they're really good. That stuff kind of crosses over a little bit. It's also rock.
Yeah.
There's even like the minimalist house techno stuff, if you go to like raves and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that's the Melbourne music scene. And like we've got lots of stuff that we have really thriving music scenes with. Yeah. So, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. I don't know if it's homogenous though. Maybe it is. I guess it is. But there's definitely lots of little ones.
Yeah.
And I guess that is is what any good music scene is, because if it was just one genre, that would be a bit shit and boring.
That's true.
Yeah.
I like how you went about that, like immediately went into like yes, there is obviously a music scene here, but like you dove into like the way that it's broken up into these little communities and everything that exists. How often, in your opinion, how often do the different like scenes actually interact with each other, if they do?
I guess it depends on the genre, because you could easily put a show on that had psych bands and punk bands playing.
Yeah.
It would be a bit weird to have a house DJ also playing at that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. But yeah, fairly often. But I think the places where you would get that is like places when you, there's like Meredith and Golden Plains and stuff like that, that do those sort of bigger mid-sized festivals. They're a pretty good blend of everything.
Mm.
And they do get local acts pretty consistently. And it's like, it's not around anymore, but Boogie was another one. And festivals come and go a lot, but Meredith has it. Meredith's still kicking.
Yay. Great. And then the last question is, Does living in Melbourne give you a sustainable path for your career? Why or why not?
Yeah, I don't think I could do it anywhere else other than Melbourne, because I'd move out of Melbourne in a second weather-wise. I'd be straight up here to Queensland if they had the music scene we had in Melbourne, or the art scene. I'm not sure that you could make money in the arts in the way that I do anywhere else in Australia. Maybe Sydney. It just certainly doesn't have nowhere else as diverse a thing. Because I could take my skills to Sydney and do corporate audiovisual and make shitloads of money. That'd probably be the smarter thing to do. But that's not why I do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. I think there's the variety of arts and music within Melbourne. I don't think I'd be able to do it anywhere else other than Melbourne.
Yeah. And I think what you said too is really not surprising, actually, with the whole thing of like Melbourne versus Sydney in terms of what that even means musically. Like, you get the corporate side versus, not to say there isn't corporate, you know, positions or anything here.
Yeah.
But I think the way that, even just like for me as someone who's only been here for a couple months now and has really been integrated into this, a part of the scene, one scene. Yeah. I get this whole different sense of like, when you are in a place that has this really deep, rich culture and history of music, not just being something that is done, but something that is actually like consistently, I don't even know like the right word, like it's just flowing.
Yeah.
Like, it's a creative space, and like, you don't even have to necessarily be in music to feel that, like the way it flows here. So it just means a little bit more something, like you get more heart in it, I think.
Yeah, that's nice. I like it. I don't want to blow smoke up Melbourne too much. it's a very wanky Melbourne thing to do, but I do agree. But I'm getting my classic Australian tall poppy thing of being wanting to not shit. No,
it's fine. Well, cool.
But yeah, no, you're right. It does flow, and it's a very cool place. I like it a lot. I've been all over the country this year, but definitely my home.
Yeah. Right on. Well, that is all the questions I have for you. Do you have any last minute questions for me or anything?
So what is going to be the outcome? Are you writing a paper or are you writing a,
Yes. So it's due on the 5th of August. So I'm really getting these.
Yeah, right.
It took a while, like on my supervisor's end, to give me like feedback on things, which is totally fine. He's back in London. That's like 9 hours behind. So I give him lots of grace for that. He cannot help that. but it's, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to transcribe all the interviews that I have and then begin to look through and just find different patterns of what people are, like how people are responding to the questions, because there are the baseline questions that I have, which are like the main ones I stop and like go through, versus the other ones that are just a bit more like, I want to know more because I'm
interested.
So I'm going to take that and just understand like how that fits into all these other things that I've been reading about prior. So like pre-COVID, like Melbourne, but also pre-COVID Australian music, and then seeing how are people talking about the industry now and just like their journeys through it, to kind of paint a picture of like, this is actually what's going on from the viewpoint of musicians in the city that is like known for music. How are they actually viewing it? And then that's going to provide just a snapshot of like, well, these X amount of musicians have said this. This is something that maybe from like a governmental standpoint or maybe like a local stakeholder standpoint, this is how we can maybe support these musicians more in different ways, or just being able to actually understand what's happening, because that's the overall issue now, at least from what I'm reading and what I've been talking about in conversations. It's just the gap of knowledge about what's actually happening without talking to the musicians. And I think that's such a vital point. Like, you can't help a music scene grow and get to these like big things they want to see, like international exportation. You can't get there without actually backtracking and seeing what's going on the local level.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'd be keen to have a look once you finish. If it's
Of course, yeah. Since you graciously volunteered to be interviewed, I'll definitely be sharing it with everyone who interviewed with me. And that's the part that I'm really excited about. It's like getting to actually share it with people.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
No, I'd be really, really interested to see it. And it's really not an issue to get interviewed. It's like, I'm a musician. I love talking about myself.
Like, one of my, I've interviewed a few of my friends and they're like, this is not a problem. They're like, I like talking about what I do.
I'm exactly. Yeah.
That's much easier for me, which is so fun. And like, I've learned so much, like, the friends that I've interviewed thus far, like I knew some things about their music career.
Yeah.
Asking them these questions, I've learned so much more about them. And I'm like, afterwards, I've been like, oh, I didn't know that. I knew a lot more. So it's like, this has been really fun for me. I'm super passionate about this. And once it's all done, I'll feel really good and just super, super excited and keen to see like what I actually find from all of it.
Awesome, that's so cool.
Thank you
for listening and or watching this episode of the podcast, depending on what you use to tune in to the podcast. I really appreciate you getting all the way to the end, and I know I say this at the end of every episode, but I do absolutely mean it. I hope that you got something from this conversation with Tom. And I mean that because, as I said at the beginning, he provides another perspective because he is a producer, but he is also a musician. So his conversation in tandem with Anna Leverty's, I feel like, really adds a lot of extra nuance that the other conversations that I have didn't quite have that. Not that they didn't have nuance, but it adds a little something else there. And I think that's the really fun thing about this conversation with Tom, is that we both didn't know each other before this. There was no mutual connection that got us in contact with each other. It was just because of how I was promoting my research project and how I was looking for musicians to talk to. And he just stumbled across it, and boom, we had this really great conversation. And I think there's just so many things that stand out to me from this conversation. And I think a lot of the things that were actually talked about align with some of the things, or not even some, to be honest, a lot of the stuff that Musicians Australia advocates for, and they are a labor union that advocates for better working conditions, livable conditions, and just overall for musicians of Australia to get to be seen and heard as individuals, and also ensuring that they get the right support that they need to ensure that they can continue having a livelihood as a musician, but also as a person, which are two equally important things, such as ensuring that they do get paid the $250 minimum, and that they not only get paid that $250 minimum, but they do get paid, which is becoming an increasingly larger issue that it's not great at all. But anyway, all this to show you with this conversation and the past conversations and the conversations that are coming up to finish season one is that things are changing, and there are still things that need to be changed to make the music industry better for musicians at any stage of their career. Whether they are emerging or established, things need to change to better the environment that they operate in. And I hope that these conversations allow for more space for advocacy and new talking points, or just to elaborate on these talking points to showcase the fact that things need to progress. And I think all this is moving in a hopeful direction. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. And in the show description notes, there will be links so you can check out Tom's band and also to look into the research paper that I have created for these season one's conversations. And you can also head over to the Rockin' and Talkin' Pod, which is the Instagram handle, to have conversations with me, leave questions, comments, whatever. My direct messages are open, so you can talk to me at any point in time. I do respond, and I'll be back in Australia very, very soon, and I can't wait to think about ending season one on a really high note and having some fun time back in Australia with my friends and getting myself all put together there, and then season two may begin planning. Who knows? Anyway, thank you for just tuning in as always, and I'll see you soon for more Rockin' and Talkin'. Take care. Cheers.